Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner Show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this special Children's Corner show, where my very special guest is Georgianne Irvine, and we'll be talking about her new books, Stories of Survival and Beating the Odds, Hope and Inspirational Stories for Children and Their Families. When San Diego native Georgianne Irvine was a child, she slept with dozens of stuffed animals on her bed, a lion, two teddy bears, a tiger, a monkey, an elephant, and more. It was most certainly indicative of what was to come. A lifelong career at the San Diego Zoo Global as a spokesperson and champion for wildlife and conservation, as well as an award-winning author of children's books about animals. More importantly, she has been helping children learn about compassion, perseverance, friendship, and more through her brilliant and awe-inspiring children's book series. The series features two tales about zoo and safari park animals that have overcome challenges and hardships in their lives, and that goes for children and their families too. The books that we'll be talking about tonight are Fabulous Floyd, Ruxa and Raina, and Karen's Heart. So let me go ahead and bring on Georgianne. Hello, Georgianne. Thanks for joining me.
Good evening. Well, thank you for such a lovely introduction. I'm thrilled to be talking with you.
Thank you. I am as well. And I'm going to really start real quick and let people know that, you know, we have, since we were coming on to the show, or maybe a couple weeks before, we connected on Facebook. And I just love looking at your posts and your adventures. It looks like you have a lot of fun.
Oh, I do have a lot of fun. And I love to travel. I love to hang out with my dogs. I love to go to Broadway musicals. So I just enjoy appreciating life.
Yeah. So let's talk first a little bit about, you know, I mentioned in the introductions, you know, you started with a bunch of stuffed animals, which many children do, but you grew up, you know, to be working in a zoo. So kind of how did that unfold? How did, you know, that journey unfold for you?
Amazingly, I was born in San Diego, and I know they say there aren't a lot of San Diego natives. And so I grew up going to the zoo when I was a child, and my family moved away to Orange County. I like to call it my 10-year leave of absence from San Diego. But I came back to college and studied journalism. And it's really interesting because I tried to get an internship at the zoo my senior year of college because I thought it sounded fun. And it was amazing that a PR assistant job came up a couple weeks after I graduated, and I made it to the top two. But I didn't get the job, but they called me 8 months later and the job had opened up again. So it was really a dream come true to be able to work at the zoo. But initially, I just thought it sounded fun. I didn't realize the importance of zoos, how animals are disappearing around the world. And so once I learned about that, it gave me a whole new purpose in life, and that was to be a spokesperson and tell animal stories. And then as far as the children's books, one of my jobs was editing our children's news, editing and writing, I should say, our children's newspaper, Koala Club News. And my grandmother used to write children's books. They were not published, but she had them bound, you know, so they weren't published by a publisher. Mm-hmm. And I always said to my boss, someday I would like to write children's books. Had the most wonderful boss in the world. A publisher approached San Diego Zoo and wanted to do a series of 6 books featuring animal photos, but they didn't have a writer. And they asked her, and she said, well, I have an employee who you might want to have as a freelance writer to do the books. So the next thing you know, I have a contract to do 6 books. It's like, oh my gosh, my dream came true, but I've never written a book in my life. And I remember writing the first manuscript. And this was a long time ago, before we even had fax. And I remember calling my editor and reading it over the phone. It was a book called Sydney the Koala. And when she said, that's it, that's exactly what we want, it gave me the courage and the inspiration to finish the rest. And then I've done all kinds of freelance books. But now my job at the zoo is overseeing a publishing division and writing these hope and inspiration books. It's so near and dear to my heart. And it's, I just, 3 years ago, I never dreamed I'd be doing something like this for my own organization.
Yeah. Wow, that's wonderful. I lived in San Diego for a while, and the zoo was by far my most favorite place to go. I mean, you can spend hours and hours and hours in there, and you know, just so much to see, and it's just such a well laid out, it's a very thoughtful zoo, I think.
Thank you. I thank you for saying that. And it's interesting because over the years, and I've been there a very long time, I've seen lots of changes, and we have just made the zoo better and better. And we've had a lot of old exhibits that we've torn down, and we've given more space to the animals. And then we also have our San Diego Zoo Safari Park. And I'm hoping when you lived in San Diego, you had a chance to go to the park, because the park is 1,800 acres. And in many of the areas, you see herds of animals, you know, doing the behaviors that they do in the wild. Like, I was just at the park yesterday on what we call a caravan safari. And so you take a truck out into these big enclosures. And I was in an enclosure that was 60 acres. And we had such great views of rhinos and close-up encounters with giraffes. So the Safari Park, which is our sister organization, is absolutely spectacular too, and also holds a special place in my heart, in addition to the zoo.
Well, one of my passions is photography and you know, nature photography. I do mostly, you know, flowers and landscapes and that kind of thing. But I have gone to a zoo here in South Carolina and did a calendar last year going wild with you know, a bunch of zoo animals. But you know, one of the things that, and I have not gone to the safari, so to me that sounds like it would be for a you know, photographer's dream, you know, to be able to go on that and get some great. Yeah. Speaking of photos, in most children's books there are illustrations, you know.
Yes.
And in your book series, they're photos. So can you tell us about how, you know, the first of all, you know, why you did it that way, and then kind of how did the process of using photos as illustrations kind of work out?
Because these are true animal stories, I felt that it was really important to show the real animal. And the challenge on doing these books is having enough photos from that animal's life that document it from, you know, point A to point B where the story ends. And that's a constant challenge for us. But the initial inspiration behind these books was the thought that if a child could connect to a specific animal, for example, if a child could get to know Karen Orangutan and they could see her pictures and learn about her and learn about the challenges she had in life, you know, it makes it more real, but that would inspire the child not just to love Karen, but to appreciate all orangutans and all other wildlife and learn to care about the planet. And I think people learn by stories. So if I can tell and write a story about an individual animal and sneak in a few animal facts, that has much more of an impact. And we are doing illustrated children's books as well, but those are fictional stories where the animals talk. And, of course, these are nonfiction where we don't have Floyd the Flamingo saying, hey, I think I'd like a roommate. These are realistic stories, but they do have heart and soul, and there is some humor in them. But I think it's the photos that really bring the stories to life. And a lot of people say, well, gosh, you must have a lot of inspirational stories at the zoo and safari park. And my answer to that is we absolutely do. But the number of stories that we either have already documented or have the opportunity to document with photos is very, you know, there just aren't that many.
A smaller subset.
Stories.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I have
yeah.
to get photos in any way that I can, whether we have one photographer. So sometimes I have to shoot the photos. I have keepers shooting the photos. I even, in one of our newest books, used a couple cell phone photos that were actually really good, but I want to make the story as real as possible so that the kids can relate to that particular animal.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I understand that. And they're wonderful photos. I mean, you
Thank
really
you.
Did a great selection of photo to matching the text, which was great. And I have to say, probably one of my most favorite pictures out of all the three books was the picture of the baby flamingo. I think it must have been Floyd. You know, baby.
That would be Floyd. Yes. That would be Floyd.
That was just a, you know, I just love that fuzzy little picture. So anyway, that's my favorite. But so what I'd like to do now kind of is go through the three books.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned that they came to you for a six-book deal. Are these the only, these three so far, and you have three more to do?
This was back in the early days of the zoo. That's how I just got started writing children's books. And I did a couple dozen freelance. And then when I got this new position at the zoo, we conceived of the Hope and Inspiration collection of books. So there are many, many more in the works. In fact, a fourth book in the collection is coming out in October, and we're already in the design phase of another book, and I'm researching another. So really, it's limitless.
Got
so
it.
Yes, those six first books were like
that
way back
first.
Early on in my career when I was just a baby, you know, like a child.
about 10 years ago, right? So,
yeah, it was only 10
know,
years ago.
well, you know, that's great to know. I mean, because you know, as I was going through and reading them, my mind went to the idea that they're obviously, you know, in the zoo, you're going to have so many stories, you know, that would be available, and that would be great. Now, one thing I did want to let listeners know is that your books were silver winners of the Benjamin Franklin Award from the Independent Book Publisher. So that was a nice accolade. And the gold.
And Raina won the gold book in that, and Karen won the silver medal.
Oh, great. Well, so let's talk about each of them. Okay, so let's start with the, is it Ruxa and Raina? Is that how
it's
you pronounce
Ruxa
it? It's
Ruxa and Raina.
Ruxa.
Yes, it's
Ruxa and Raina.
Ruxa and Raina. And Ruxa's okay. a cheetah. And that book is about friendship and miracles. So people say, okay, a dog and a cheetah, what does that mean? We have a lot of dog and cheetah animal ambassadors. And what we have found is, first of all, cheetahs are kind of dog-like in certain ways. I mean, they've got non-retractable claws. Their disposition is much calmer than big cats like tigers and lions. And we have found that these dogs and cheetahs get along very well together. And we put them together when they're really young, and the dog becomes kind of like a security blanket for the cheetah. So if the dog says, it's okay to go to this television show to teach people about conservation, if the dog is calm, the cheetah is calm. So with Ruxa and Raina, they were put together at a very young age. And Ruxa had bowed legs, and we thought he would outgrow them, but he didn't. So we decided that he needed surgery, and so he had surgery on his legs, and the vets thought that he'd definitely be able to walk, but he probably wouldn't be able to run when he grew up. And so Raina was by his side during the surgery, and interestingly, as he was healing, nobody told Ruxa that he couldn't run, so he ran anyway. And I saw him yesterday running 60 miles an hour on our cheetah run. So that was miracle one. And the best friends stayed together. Then when they were 2 years old, Raina, the dog, and she's a Rhodesian Ridgeback, got terminal cancer. And I mean, terminal cancer, there was no hope. They stopped all treatment on her, and they gave her 6 weeks to 2 months to live. And because they were so bonded, the trainer's really worried, okay, what's Rooksa going to do when he loses Raina? So we brought in a puppy, hoping to bond the puppy with Rooksa, but also to help lift Raina's spirits as she was going downhill. And 2 months pass, and Raina hasn't died. In fact, Raina does not even seem sick anymore. So we re-examine her, and it turns out, and keep in mind, we're talking terminal cancer. Two of the tumors, the smaller tumors, had completely disappeared. The bigger one had gotten small enough that we could do surgery to remove it. Then Raina went through chemotherapy, and the duo became a trio because Raina was proclaimed cancer-free, and Rooks and Raina are now 5 years old. Another miracle. So these books are meant to inspire kids, and also this particular book to give them hope.
Yeah, I mean, there are just so many lessons in there, you know, and the idea of, you know, a dog and a cheetah, you know, that cross species be, you know, good friends, you know, and the importance of it, you know, that, you know, for children, you know, they can, it would be a valuable lesson to teach them about, you know, just because you're different, you can be really good friends and real important to each other.
Right. Absolutely. And I think it shows, you know, it talks about the friendship of these animals, and I think kids can relate to animals. An interesting thing that I found, and as I said earlier, the whole idea was to inspire kids to love animals and help San Diego Zoo lead the fight against extinction. But what we've started finding is that these books are teaching children about life. And my niece teaches school in one of the underserved areas, and she told me that when she reads these stories in her class, that the kids, for the first time, you know, they're not relating to people, but they are relating to these animals, and they are hanging on every word, and they are learning lessons from these animals that they can apply to their lives. So that's just a bonus on what we have found these books are doing, and just it warms my heart when I hear things like that, because that wasn't the original intention, but if I can touch children's lives and make their lives better, boy, that my job is done. You know, that is really important to me.
Well, yeah, you know, and also, you know, being touching on the issue of cancer, you know, and treatments, you know, the, you know, kids, I mean, it happens in everyday life, and that's one of those areas that can be very challenging for children to process.
It can be absolutely challenging, and I know cancer is devastating and not everybody survives it, but you at least have to have hope, you know? I mean, that hope does a lot physically to you, too, if you can at least have some hope. So this is a story that does give hope and that shows that animals survive cancer, people can survive cancer, too.
Yeah.
And they can fight it.
That, you're right. And that puppy, the introduction of the puppy. I mean, you know, just the idea of that, you know, puppy love. When you think about puppy love, you know, that the impact that had on the trio, you know. And so, you know, there you're also bringing in, you know, that extra support, the idea of extra support. And that
exactly.
It matters.
Well, what's funny is originally Rooksa the cheetah did not like the puppy. I mean, why should he want another dog when he has his beloved Raina? And so it took a little bit for him to warm up to the puppy. But like I said, now they all, you know, sleep together and snuggle together and play together. So it's a really wonderful relationship, and it's a wonderful story to share with people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I want to just take a real quick break, Jordan, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in with any questions, you can call in at 619 789 1-800-273-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them. And then when we come back from break, Jordan, let's go ahead and jump into Fabulous Floyd.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Jordan Irvine, and we're talking about her three children's books, Ruxa and Raina, Karen's Heart, and Fabulous Floyd. And the books are available at Amazon.com, but they're also available at ShopZoo.com. Okay, so with that, we're back, Jordan.
Yes.
Great.
Hello.
Excuse me. So I really am delighted that these books are out there. But also, you mentioned in during the break that you have plush toys available.
Yes, we have created plush to go with each book. For example, on Karen's Heart, because she had open heart surgery, and we'll talk about that a little later. We have a little orangutan with a shaved spot in her chest with a little heart on it. Ruxa and Raina, we have a dog and a cheetah who are connected, you know, best friends. And with Floyd, it's amazing because that seems to be the most popular plush. Floyd had some issues with his legs, and so the plush has a little Band-Aid on the flamingo's legs. And I hear kids saying, "I want that. That flamingo has a boo-boo on his leg, just like I do." And it's just funny. So that the plush, you know, try to relate. There's something about them that's characteristic of the story. And you don't have to buy the two together. But we've found that I've been receiving pictures of children snuggling like Floyd the Flamingo plush while they're reading the book. And it's just really charming. So it's just another way for the kids to connect with the animals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, well, you said that I read in the introduction that you had them all on your bed. So, you
yes,
know, I
mean,
did. There's just that natural affinity, I think, you know, and that's
absolutely.
It's wonderful.
And yep, I would like to say every purchase, San Diego Zoo is a not-for-profit organization, and, you know, everything we do is for wildlife and for conservation. So all of these purchases, you know, all of the money goes back to support the important work that we do around the world on behalf of wildlife. So I would like listeners to know that they are actually supporting conservation work around the world when they purchase the books and the plush.
That's wonderful. I mean, it's just a win-win-win all around. So
absolutely,
and you don't get many of those. So okay, well, let's talk about Fabulous Floyd. So you mentioned that he had a little bit of difficulty with his legs. So tell us a little bit about Floyd's story.
So Floyd is an animal. We also call an Ambassador Flamingo. So he's habituated to people. And the idea is to get people up close to flamingos, let them feed them, and again, to inspire them to care about wildlife and flamingos. So Floyd was habituated with a small flock of other chicks, but he particularly liked to be held. He would snuggle in the trainer's arms, and he just loved being held. So as he was growing up, we noticed that it looked like he had two left feet, and it's just that one of his legs was bending in a certain direction. And flamingo legs are very fragile, and they're really crucial to the well-being of the animals, of flamingos. So we tried to straighten the leg, and it turns out that he needed surgery on one of his legs to straighten it. And what was amazing is they don't do surgery on flamingos very often, particularly, you know, the legs of flamingos. And because he liked to be held, you know, he needed to be off the leg. He sat in his trainer's arms. We had night shifts, you know, 24/7 healing. So then that leg healed, but because he had put so much strain on the other leg, he also needed surgery on that leg. So to have the first surgery was something, but to have a second surgery was just almost unheard of. And it was interesting because I remember asking the trainers, you know, when is enough enough? And they said, Floyd does not want to give up. Every day he makes progress. And as long as Floyd shows us that he wants to keep going on with all of this, we are there for him. And Floyd to this day is one of my favorite flamingos at the zoo. He's healthy. He's healed. His legs are healed. And he's a really good illustration of not giving up, not giving up on yourself, not giving up on other people. And it really was a special story to see how Floyd just wanted to be healed and he wanted to get on with his life.
Yeah. And just the whole idea of the perseverance, you know, and the not giving up. You know, there's so many times now it seems that, you know, life for kids can change so quickly that, you know, giving up, you know, that their attention span on particular, you know, things sometimes is short. And you know, the idea of, you know, keeping at something, you know, until you win or until you overcome or until you, you know, meet the challenge, those are things that, you know, the opportunities to see that don't seem to come up a whole lot, or at least the ability to learn that as a positive value.
Absolutely, and kids relate to Floyd, and they see, you know, they read about him, and he doesn't want to give up, and we don't want to give up on him. And I will just give you a little aside, something our people discovered when they were cradling Floyd on their lap. I think your listeners will get a kick out of this. We learned that flamingos dream and they snore. And it's something, at least maybe other people knew that, but we didn't know that. And so Floyd's sitting on the lap and he falls asleep and he's snoring and then he's twitching, you know, like your dog twitches. And so it was just really a fun discovery. So in the books, we also have little call-outs that have fun facts like that are part of the story, but we call them out just because we think kids will enjoy those types of things as well. But that was one of my favorite flamingo facts. And another thing about Floyd is he had to have bandages on his legs. And so there became a competition. He had to have the bandage changed every year. But the hospital keepers and the trainers all started wanting to decorate Floyd's bandages. So every day he had a new bandage with a new decoration. I mean, one had a lightning bolt and a cloud, you know, one had a heart. And it was just really fun for everybody. I don't think Floyd knew the difference, but it was pretty fun that people were part of the fun of it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's what, you know, I think, kids, that's something that kids would just latch onto, especially, you know, if there are kids who, like you had indicated, that have identify with some of, you know, Floyd's bandages and the, you know, the injuries that, you know, kind of brought them about, you know, that, you know, that kind of identification that, if a child can identify with that, then the perseverance and all the other aspects of Floyd, you know, they, if they haven't, you know, already learned it, then it's something that they
right.
can, you know, it kind of raises the awareness for them.
Absolutely. And something that's not in the book, but I think you might get a kick out of this. He was actually named after Pink Floyd, the band, but kids don't know that. So I didn't put it in the book, but the trainers told me that indeed his name is Floyd because of that, which I think is kind of funny too. And I know that adults know that band, and I think the parents get a big kick out of that.
Well, that's all right. You know, especially now if there's going to be a grandma, a grandpa out there who's going to read the story of Floyd, I mean, they're going to be able to chuckle throughout the whole book, you know, with
yes.
that particular association. Yeah.
That's right.
Well,
fabulous
yeah.
Floyd. One of the things we have in the books that I think is really important is we have facts about the animals in the books, and then we talk about their status in the wild and how they can help. But one of the other fun things we did is on the end papers of the book, we have Floyd's footprints, and we have Ruxa and Raina's footprints. So it's just a little bonus so the kids can see what a flamingo footprint looks like or a paw print of a cheetah. And so we've really made use of all of the space in the book, but those are just little bonuses that make it even more fun and interesting than it already is.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and you know, I mean, those pages would normally be blank. It's kind of like the, you know, the little extra blooper credits at the end of a movie. You know, those little extra
right.
pluses that you get. So yeah, so that,
yeah,
that,
why
that's
leave
great.
It
I mean,
blank?
Exactly. Well, that's a wonderful plus too. So the last book that we want to talk about is Karen's Heart. The orangutan. So,
yeah.
In this particular one too, I just want to say that a very good friend of mine has a child who's 4 years old right now, and has
mm-hmm.
gone through such a rough start to her first 4 years, with surgeries and all that kind of thing. And I just thought that Karen's Heart's going to be perfect for her, you know, for her to read and to be able to, you know, get that association. So. Would you mind sharing with the listeners Karen's Heart, Karen's story?
Absolutely. And this was actually the first book we did of this collection. And this is a little bit older story, but it's an important story. So Karen's mother is an orangutan, and her mother rejected her when she was a baby. So we had to hand-rear her in our nursery. But then we reintroduced her back to the orangutan group. And we found that she was not growing as quickly as she should. She wasn't putting on the weight she should be putting on, and the keepers just sensed something was wrong. So when we examined her, we found out that she had a hole in her heart. And amazingly, one of the nation's top heart-lung surgery teams volunteered their time to do open heart surgery on Karen. Now, this happened in 1994, and I was in public relations at the zoo at the time. So I remember watching the surgery from a window, you know, above the surgery room in our zoo hospital. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, with all the equipment they brought in and all the doctors and nurses, I could have a heart mm-hmm. lung transplant in there myself. but it was really remarkable. And it's interesting because originally we were a little bit concerned about the public perception, you know, okay, here are these top-notch doctors doing surgery on an orangutan. And what we were told mm-hmm. by UCSC, which is where the doctors were from, they said that they let no child go untreated. So that was good. And then what mm-hmm. we found was the entire community rallied around Karen the orangutan. And the surgery went really well. And one of the doctors said, if her parents were human, I would tell them everything went just fine. But that night after the surgery, things changed drastically because Karen got an issue with her lungs and had to be put on a ventilator. She couldn't breathe on her own. And so she was on this ventilator for 2 weeks, and we honestly didn't know if she was going to make it or not. But it was interesting because the local medical community rallied around Karen, and we had, and I like to say human doctors and nurses versus veterinary doctors and nurses. Of course, they're
right.
All humans. Mm-hmm. But the entire medical community rallied around Karen. And I remember one doctor saying, not one of our vets, but one of the doctors said, I am not leaving her side. She is my patient, and I am staying with her as long as I need to sit with her. And we started getting letters and cards from around the world. And I'd like to share one of those letters because we put it in the book. But I will first say, obviously, Karen survived. She's 27 years old. We call her a little princess, and she's at the zoo today. And she loves to turn somersaults, loves to turn somersaults. And it's just really funny because you can tell it's Karen because there she is. And she taught, we have another young orangutan who's 5 years old, and she taught her to turn somersaults as well. But one of the things that was just a bonus with this book is I received a letter from a little girl that touched my heart. And this is in 1994. And I kept the letter for all of these years. And the little girl had drawn this beautiful yellow sun and clouds and rainbows. So we decided to feature her letter in the Karen Orangutan book. And the essence of the letter was it's a little girl who's 5 years old, and she heard about Karen's surgery. And she says, I thought about you all day. I know it could be pretty scary to be in the hospital because I was recently diagnosed with leukemia. I spent over a month at a children's hospital, and now I'm home. I'm looking forward to visiting you as soon as I'm able to do so. So listen to your doctors and nurses. Take your medicine. I hope yours tastes better than mine. Love, Jenny. So our publisher said to me, well, do you have permission from the family to run this child's artwork? And I said, well, no. I said, this was in 1994. And I said, for all these years, I've kept this letter, but I was afraid to follow up and what happened to Jenny. I said, I just don't know that I really wanted to know because I was afraid. And so mm-hmm. he said, well, if you're going to run the letter, you really need to, get permission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I plugged her name, and I can say her name on the air. Her name was Jennifer Auger. So I plugged her name into Google, and up pops LinkedIn, Jennifer Auger, nurse, Rady's Children's Hospital. That's in San Diego. When I was 5 years old, I had leukemia, and I beat it. I found her, and I'll never forget the first time I spoke with her on the phone, and she's just the most wonderful, wonderful, caring woman in the world. And she just got her emergency room certification, and she's so vivacious and so full of life. And she said that the nurses, when she was ill, inspired her to become a nurse. But more than that, she said that when she was diagnosed with leukemia, her mother told her that she became very, very withdrawn. So her mother suggested that she write to somebody else who was sick. And that somebody else was Karen Orangutan. And Jenny said that in a time of great darkness in her life, Karen brought her light. And to this day, Karen is Jenny's favorite animal in the zoo, and she visits her often. The two have something very much in common. So we not only ran the letter in the book, but we were able to run a call out that said, Jenny is a grown-up now. She beat leukemia, and she's a nurse at a children's hospital. And that was just a bonus to this story that made my year when I found out and met Jenny Auger for the first time. It was just one of those things that never in my wildest dreams, after I kept that letter for so many years, would I really get to meet her. And so I think that is an aspect of this story that also gives hope to children.
I agree. And it is when I read that letter, you just can't help but get choked up, and then that call out of her now and having beaten leukemia. That's the kind of inspiration and hope that, any child who has a diagnosis of leukemia or anything even similar, would just gravitate toward, and that bubble of hope, that kind of perks pops out from the page.
Absolutely, that bubble of hope. And something people might not know, San Diego Zoo has what's called the San Diego Zoo Kids Channel, and it was funded by a very generous donor. And what it is, it's a channel of nonstop animal stories that runs in children's hospitals. And we're right now in 275 children's hospitals and Ronald McDonald houses. But what we found is that these animal stories help the children forget that they're sick, even for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And we've had parents tell us that for the first time ever, since the child has been in the hospital, the child actually smiled. And so that's just an extension of these books. And I think my point is that kids do relate to animals and that they are inspirational and they can inspire children and at least help them, you know, live in a different world for even a short time.
Yeah, it is, you know, and, you know, that kind of thing, it's sometimes just really difficult to find something that, you know, can accomplish that, you know, I mean, because it's just such a challenging journey for someone young. So
right.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you know, Georgianne, I just love the books. I really do. I mean, for so
Thank
many different
you.
Reasons.
Thank you.
You know,
so
and,
much.
And they're wonderful. And I look forward to the next ones in the series. And now that we're connected on Facebook, I'm sure I'll see them when you come up and feel free to let me know to come back and talk about them.
Well, you'll see the next book. It launches in October, and it's about a baby monkey who was raised by his grandmother. And I think a lot of kids are going and families are going to relate to that. It's called Mosi Musa, a true tale about a baby monkey raised by his grandma. And that's a really special story, too. So you'll be seeing that on my Facebook page probably in a few days.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the anticipation. I can't wait. Well, this was truly a delight to speak with you, Georgianne. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about the books and share the stories. I mean, they're just wonderful stories.
Thank you, Robert. It means the world that you like the books, too, because I know you know, your whole purpose with your show is to, you know, be inspirational to your listeners and to children. And so the fact that you love these books means the world to me.
Well, I do, and you know, they just check off again so much, and they're fine quality, really great quality. I mean, and the photos and the color and just everything about them is really good. And this is the kind of book that parents and grandparents can read time and again, you know, and that, you know, for those children who are creative, you're just showing them the picture and then having the parent or grandparents say, okay, you know. Tell me a story about that picture. I mean, you know, so you've got, you know, in one book, you've got dozens of nights of discussion.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned your favorite picture. One of my favorite pictures is in the Karen Orang book, and it's a close-up shot of her as a baby in the front of the book, but you look at her fingernails. You see a very close-up shot of her little orangutan hands, and you look at the perfection of those fingernails, and there's when people get the book and they see that picture, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But it just mesmerizes me. And that's probably one of my favorite pictures in the books.
That's great. Well, Georgianne, again, it was a delight. And I look forward to following your journey. And again, San Diego Zoo is one of my most favorite places in the world. And you're really doing such a wonderful service by bringing those stories and really helping children get more perseverance, strength, hope, inspiration. So it's all great. So thank you for joining me tonight.
Oh, it was really my pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you, and thank you for letting me share these stories.
And my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Georgianne Irvine. We've been talking about her books, True Tales of Zoo and Safari Park Animals, and that would be Ruxa and Raina and Karen's Heart, and of course, can't forget Fabulous Floyd. Again, the books are available from Amazon.com, but they're also available from ShopZoo.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this special edition of the Children's Corner, and until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth's Children's Corner Show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/biteradiome and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.